97.5, The Fanatic.
Joining us right now on the Comcast Business Hotline Beyond Fast is Gary Williams of Morning Drive, the Golf Town. Gary, how are you? And thank you. Happy Easter to you.
Dee, thank you. Happy Easter to you as well. I'm doing fine. Family as well. And I hope the same for you as well.
Absolutely. So I was watching. I saw a picture of you on Instagram. First of all, you have one of the neatest, well-kept offices possible, but you look like a person of such power behind that desk these days.
Dee, I will tell you, I have become, in a fun way, I've become consumed by everybody's backdrops because we are now doing television from home.
Yep, everybody says that home.
I'm so fascinated by it. The furniture, the curating, all of it. I'm totally into it.
Yeah, like the other day I heard Jimmy Kimmel ask Ellen DeGeneres, is my wallpaper, do you think it's that bad? Because somebody must have complained that he had terrible wallpaper. Unbelievable. Gary, let me ask you, this time last year, were you following Tiger on the course?
Dee, I was not only following him. I've got a little black leather-bound notebook that I've got on my desk right in front of me. I charted all 70 shots.
Whoa.
That he struck that day. It was an unusual day because of the weather forecast. They had moved up the tee times. First time in Masters history. They split the tees. They went off 1 and 10. The last group, which included Tiger and Francesco Molinari and Tony Finau, went off at 9:20. And in my little leather-bound notebook, which when I fill them up, I put them away, and then, you know, who knows? For posterity purposes, I may look back on things. I'm looking at it right now. 4:12:19, 9:20 a.m. Tiger, Molinari, and Finau, and I had their initials as related to where they stood under par, and I charted every shot.
Wow.
Time stamped it, wind direction, distance as best as I could approximate it. It was an extraordinary day. I've been very lucky in my life to be just in certain places, whether it was a kid or in my professional life. That was one of the great days, and I shared it with the senior producer, Ben Dawn, who had done live from that morning, Dee, and he was going to get in his car and drive back to Orlando. I said, Ben, what are you doing? You're going to miss it.
Yeah.
What does it make you to get home at 11 o'clock at night? So I dragged him from where we were at Augusta Country Club, our compound, across the street. And after five holes, he's like, I'm leaving, because Tiger bogeyed 4 and 5. I'm like, Ben,
it's Tiger.
Don't leave. And I didn't know. It didn't mean that I thought he was going to win. I just, don't leave. What's the point? So we stayed, and I was in the same little space behind the 18th green. I looked at my watch because it was very claustrophobic for 18 minutes because of the rope line that was put up behind the 18th green to then get him to the scoring area by the clubhouse. I stood in that one place for 18 minutes.
Wow.
After he had finished his round. It was a special day.
I'm sure it is. Well, I'm glad you bring up like it was claustrophobic, because I've been watching, you know, the past. You guys have done a great job of different tournaments, Masters memories this week. But one of the things I noticed, and it was the 04 one that I was watching because when I got off work yesterday was on, those crowds, we may never see crowds like that in the same way again.
I know. I think that's applying. Do you apply it to every sport?
Yes. Like I said, you won't do high fives. Well, there'll be a new thing. You will now nod out of respect and congratulations. You won't even fist pump people. I don't know.
I think we're probably going to establish something that has always been kind of an Eastern tradition or custom. You'll see bowing.
Bowing, yep.
You'll see nodding. They're going to be new. You know, that Rich Lerner was the last voice live on our air, and it was on Friday, March 13th at around 11:30 Eastern time after they had canceled the Players. And Rich had an essay that he had written early in the week, and I had talked to him about it. And Rich is a great writer.
Yes.
And he said to me, do you think this is too much? And I said, Rich, I don't think it is. And I don't think you're making people, you're not going to make people scared or worried. I don't think you're being hyperbolic. Anyway, the last two lines essentially that he uttered on live air on Golf Channel, I think are two of the most important lines that may, at the end of this year, stand up. And he said, the bro hug is dead and the party is over. And that was March 13th at 11:30 a.m. That was the last, essentially the last thing uttered on Golf Channel Live. Here we sit on April 12th.
Yes.
You couldn't have been more right.
Right. Absolutely. Gary, let me ask you, because I've not been to Augusta, and we were saying, why does the Masters, Augusta National, in its own right, what makes it so unique, so special compared to maybe some of the other? I know you go back to the one place every year. That's in it. That makes it different. But why is it have such a cool feel to it?
There are a couple things that I don't know necessarily that people have it wash over them in real time, but I think in reflection, a lot of people go, oh my gosh. And those things are this. They are very, very stringent about their no cell phone policy. So what happens when you get on those grounds, it is being in a time capsule in so many ways. You are not putting your phone up to capture the image or a mini video of somebody hitting a shot. You're not looking down at your phone to text friends and say, I'm standing on the 7th tee. No, it's 1975 all over again. And the people you're with, you're going to look at them and you're going to converse with one another.
Wow.
You're going to have your head up. And I can tell you, it is a liberating experience. You can say, oh God, what an inconvenience. Really? for several hours out of our life that we can't go watch some golf shots and unplug. It is, and you can say, well, they do it for reasons that have nothing to do with it. I don't care why they do it. I do think that there is a great benefit that all of us get from that. And even last year, not only Ben and I, but the people around us, you know, you'd say, well, you know, they would, everybody converses with one another. We don't communicate anymore. We stand next to our friends and text each other. That is something that I think is will always stand up is something that is refreshing. It's renewal. And then the other part of it is you mentioned going back there. There is a familiarity that provides not contempt, but comfort for viewers, for people who go back there every year. And then the sensibilities they apply to pricing. You tell your friends, hey, I'll go and get this round of beers, or I will, you know, I'll get the pimento cheese sandwiches, and somebody hands you a 20 and you come back with change. it really is an extraordinary thing, not to mention what it is Oz. They have all the resources in the world, and when you walk on there, it is the field of dreams, and it's one of the few things that gets, you know, it gets oversold, but it never underdelivers. There's not a person I've met or talk to who's either a friend or acquaintance who said, I'm going for the first time next year. And I say, you'll be blown away. And then their reaction is always the same. I was, or it was even better than I thought it could be, which was their expectation was that it was going to be the best sporting experience of their life. All those things. And then the property itself has so much elevation to it, D. When you ever get there, and I hope you do, walk right to the 10th tee and just walk that second nine, and you won't believe how much you walk downhill all the way to the bottom of the golf course, which is basically the 11th green and the 12th green. It's 350 feet from the top of the property to the bottom.
Oh, wow.
It's really something.
Wow.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic.
Let me ask you a question, because you are very well read in golf books in general, but as I was reading different articles, I said to myself, and I listened to One Up this week, so when you were talking with Jaime, who I played golf with last year, by the way, I don't know
if he's the Larry David of golf.
Hey.
If you were around him more, nobody finds himself in precarious positions more than Jaime, with just one comment that is so innocuous, but he finds himself in a tricky spot. But anyway, go ahead.
So, like, if you were recommending a golf book, because you listed so many. This week was biographies, but just in general, when I looked at your bookshelf, are there ones that you really stand out to you that you can go back to time and again, just a great read?
Yeah, there are several that we did. I mean, we really wanted to do, and we'll probably go back to it, because there are more. There's a whole section of the genre about, you know, the books that you learn so much, whether it be about one individual event or about a time period in golf. And we haven't really gotten to that genre, but there are several for me. And they're very different. One is Down the Fairway, that was written by Bobby Jones, that was published in 1927. It was actually written after the 1926 season. He was 24 years old. Now, Bobby Jones was a very, very, he was erudite. I mean, he had three degrees. He had an engineering degree. He had an English degree. He had a law degree. I mean, he went to Emory. He went to Harvard. He went to Georgia Tech. He went to the three of the finest schools in America for those particular concentrations of study. And his writing about, the first part was about his journey that thus far in life, which, again, he was only 24, but he'd already seen and experienced so much. The second half is about instruction, which is still applicable today. Then the other book that, you know, I was a young boy. My mom was a literature major, and she made me read as a kid, and I'm very grateful that she did. And I read Dead Solid Perfect, which was a Dan Jenkins book that a lot of people think, you know, North Dallas 40 or Semi-Top and those things were superior works. That's fine. They were great. Dead Solid Perfect was made into a movie that Randy Quaid did, you know, a competent job at, but the writing is so funny. Those books, to me, turn me on to golf in different ways. And then Bernard Darwin's, basically, it's his anthology. He was really the first great writer. I mean, he was related to Charles Darwin, and you know, he was very well educated. His writing about the game of golf at the turn of the century was very, very important. And then, you know, modern day stuff, Jaime's book, The Big Miss, about Tiger, that he collaborated with Hank Haney, gives you such a great, you know, inside look into, you know, his process and the way he went about things. And, you know, he was going through a period in his life, it was before the scandal, that was significant. And, you know, look, Ben Hogan's biographies, there are multiple biographies about him that are really, really good. Feinstein has written, A Good Walk Spoiled is a great look. Slaying the Tiger by Shane Ryan, about today's generation of players. He wrote it about 5 years ago. It's a fantastic look at professional golf. I've just given you a lot, but those are really good ones.
Gary, let me ask you, I know you started playing golf when you were four. Has it always been a number one sport for you?
No, baseball was my number one. And I know, you know, you know, your father was a huge influence on you. And by the way, I'm a huge fan. Your dad could saunter on a sideline is better than anybody. But nonetheless, my dad played baseball at
University
of Florida.
Yep.
And he was a Yankee fan, and we moved to Northern New Jersey when I was 7 years old, and he was a Mickey Mantle fan. And, you know, I had very good, you know, motor skills as a little kid, and then I stopped growing when I was like 10. for intents and purposes. So, you know, I kind of gravitated toward tennis, golf, swam, but golf provided me with this uninterrupted window of time with my dad because my father traveled a fair amount, and he was so engaged with my life and my sister's lives. But when I got him on a golf course, he was mine, and we could compete and we could talk. We played a lot of father-son golf tournaments. We would bicker with each other, but when it was over, you know, it didn't take me long to realize how valuable that time was. So it wasn't number one at first, but it became number one by, you know, my late teens. And then by the time I was, you know, in my early 20s, any time that I had that was spare time, I tried to find it with him playing golf.
Now, do you still get to play much or not as much?
You know what, Dee? I started playing an awful lot again at the beginning of last year. I told my wife that I was going to, you know, when I was on the road, which was a fair amount, that I was going to, you know, call friends who were in these various markets, whether it be Chicago or New York or Boston, and say, hey, I'm going to be in town and, you know, let's play golf. And I went to places I hadn't been to before, like the Chicago Golf Club. And I went back to places like Fisher's Island I hadn't been to in 25 years. I play a lot of golf now. I haven't, you know, obviously played in several weeks, but we've got a little 9-hole municipal golf course in Winter Park where I live.
And I know that place.
It's gold. It's gold. And, you know, I walk it 3-4 nights a week, and some of my colleagues, you may see a 6-time major champion, Nick Faldo, carrying his own bag there, John Cook, Chris DeMarco when he was living here, Trevor Immelman, not to mention me, Damon Machinella, Jaime, Rich Lerner. We get out there in a gangs and we play a lot of golf.
I played, that was probably my last, the first week in March was spring break because I teach up here. And that was my last round down there. And now I was able to play twice more when I got home. And then before March 13th or whatever, that changed the current way we do life. But
did you like the WP9?
That was my, oh yeah, I've been there for those Friday afternoons. That was my second year that I made an appearance.
It's our little.
It's great.
You know, it really is. I mean, it's right off of Park Avenue, which is our main street in Winter Park. I love it. And so, yeah, I've really started playing a fair amount of golf again, and I'm really enjoying it and seeing friends that I haven't seen in a while.
And my last thing for you, Gary, what do you think? Let's just assume things can go as planned and that we see a Masters in November. How do you think that will compare to what we know as this weekend in April, forever and a day?
You know, Dia, I think some of it is going to be predicated on whether they're going to be able to have people on the golf course.
Sure.
And look, the atmosphere there, it's not a Ryder Cup atmosphere, but it's real. It permeates. And those roars are real. They resonate across that property. The absence of that will be different. And
yeah.
But I do think it can be, if there is whatever our new normal might be. You know, I cannot think of a better way to, you know, spiritually, psychologically, and emotionally put a bigger bow on our little world of golf than ringing in the holiday season. And of all things, 10 days later at Thanksgiving, I'll be very thankful if people can play golf and watch golf. I think it could be really, really special. It'll be a little different. It'll be chillier. You won't have azaleas, but I wouldn't put it past Augusta because it is Oz. They can do anything. There was a time that they had a storm that literally wiped out a restroom on the property. And Billy Payne, people thought he was being glib. He said, we'll rebuild it by tomorrow. They rebuilt it the next day, including the plumbing.
Unbelievable.
That the place is amazing. I think it'll be really, really special. And play long, be cooler, but be very cool.
Gary, thank you so much for spending part of your morning with us. I appreciate it. I really do.
Well, Dee, thank you for having me. To all your listeners out there, I wish that they continue to stay healthy, be safe. And I look forward to talking to you down the road.
Absolutely. And I'll catch you on the morning drive. By the way, your interview with Mark O'Mara the other day, I always thought he seems such a nice man. And I so enjoyed listening to him talk the other day about a number of topics. But I enjoyed
that.
He's
the prince of a guy. Thank you for saying that.
I appreciate it. Gary, take care. Have a great rest of your Sunday. Thanks for joining us.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us on the Comcast Business Hotline Beyond Fast.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.